In Places in the Heart, a movie, during the last scene of that movie, as they pass the cups, each one of the members of the congregation, as the tray is coming by, and then taking the tray themselves, turns to the next one in the pew beside them, and as they are passing the tray, says, "Peace of God." It's an entirely symbolic scene, dramatized to say something. The director has something in mind, I'm not sure what, but most people don't really have a clue as to what the director wanted to say. In the scene are people who do not belong. Those people I'm talking about and referring to were either killed in the movie early on, or killed the one next to him, or had actually moved on to another place. You're black and white, rich and poor, dead and living, all placed in the congregation for that scene. And this peace of God that they say to one another is what's symbolic. Because passing a tray of cups and even taking of the cup and drinking of the cup does not provide peace. So it's actually symbolic of the peace of God. If you think about it, and I have thought about it, the little cups of juice are incapable of bringing peace to anyone. But what they symbolize can. It is what is memorialized in the symbolic contents of those cups that brings peace to a person. And peace is ubiquitous in the scriptures. The saying, "peace of God," believe it or not, is actually tied to the greeting that the disciples pronounced when they left Jesus and went on their mission and were entering into a house. Which house they were to go to was left open-ended. Jesus didn't tell them what addresses to go to, but left that up to his discretion. Or did he? The greeting of peace seems to serve as a way to discern whether or not a man of peace resides therein. If a man of peace lived there, Jesus expressed that the greeting would be received positively, not rejected, and the disciples would gain entrance to a place to stay that served as a home base for them while they carried out the mission on which they were sent. The greeting is not described any further or defined or expounded upon. It just simply is related. But it is a word from the Lord to that household. I mean, the disciples are, after all, heralds of the message Jesus gives them. And depending upon the response of the word peace, the pair of disciples would know if a man of peace lives there. In one sense, peace comes close to being a code word recognized by the man of peace therein. This reminds me of a checkpoint or a guard post in earlier times during the wars, the big wars, when a sentry would ask someone approaching him a question. Not only who goes there, but there would be this question that only another American soldier would know how to answer. Who won the World Series? Might be asked in some certain year and in how many innings, or what was this or that player's batting average. The answer to the question posed was almost always something obscure, at least to foreigners, and widely known by Americans. The enemy would therefore be identified as an imposter or a spy and not granted access or worse would happen to them, perhaps. In this case, the peace spoken at the doorstep by the disciples perhaps is said to come to rest on the man of peace therein, or it didn't rest and return to the pair of disciples that said it in the first place. Presumably, they would continue on to another house where the same scenario was repeated until a successful exchange. Certain questions are begged by the text for sure. For example, if there is a man of peace in that house, wouldn't there already be peace in that house? I'm just asking. Regardless, if the conditions were met, the peace greeting, peace spoken of, or peace declared remains. It's a good match by finding out whether or not the disciples' greeting would be received or not, and it came to rest on the man of peace, and therefore the disciples came to rest from their journey in that house as well. If there is no man of peace in that house, rejection of the peace greeting occurs and the greeting boomerangs back to the disciples who spoke it. It sounds like in one case the greeting is effective while in the other it would not be. That is because the greeting at the house doorstep is more than a word. It's actually a prayer. It's a blessing. It's a desire for the household to which it is spoken, and, of course, to the Son of Peace who lives within. How do I know that? Well, because the word irene in the Greek, or is the Greek equivalent to the Hebrew word shalom. Well, you ask, if they meant shalom, why didn't they just say shalom? Well, the answer to that is kind of a long story. The people in those days spoke either Greek or Aramaic, which came from the Arameans in the Babylonian captivity. If you read the history that I offered you a few Sundays ago, you'd read this: intermingling with other races, and I put sick there because it's not about races, has led to many of the traditional Jewish ordinances losing their hold. Many Jews took Greek names, accepted a school of Greek philosophy, and tried to combine the wisdom of Greece with the faith of their fathers. Others resisted Hellenism, which is something becoming like a Greek, or influenced by Greek in Greece. Others resisted Hellenism and became more and more engrossed in the study of their law. Well, there's more to it than that. When Alexander conquered the world, the language his soldiers used was adopted and widely used throughout the conquered nations, which became Hellenized by default. On a positive note, were it not for that common language, the gospel would never have spread so quickly, especially when it was combined with the peace of Rome and the Roman roads. But let me also offer you this quote. It comes from a fellow named Fritz Cheney. Jesus was multilingual. He would have known Greek because that was the literary language of his day. It's the language in which his disciples, even John and Peter, the fishermen, wrote the Gospels and Epistles. So if they knew Greek, and the people who were reading their books knew Greek, obviously it was so well known and used that Jesus would have used it as well. Jesus also spoke in Aramaic. When he did, the Gospel writer translated the meaning in Greek. For instance, when Jesus spoke to the dead girl, he said, "Talitha cum," meaning, "little girl, get up," Mark 5:41. Other examples of Jesus using Aramaic words or phrases are Mark 7:34, Mark 14:36, and Matthew 5:22, John 20:16, and Matthew 27:46. That last one was Jesus on the cross crying out to God. He did that in Aramaic. Jesus also could read and probably speak Hebrew. I don't think there's any doubt that he could speak any language that he wants to, but that's what this fellow wrote. Back to the quote. In Luke 4:16 through 21, he, Jesus, stood up and read from Isaiah in Hebrew. He also asked that the scribes and the Pharisees would answer him on multiple occasions, "Have you not read?" And then referred to a passage from the Old Testament. So Irene, or peace, was the word that substituted for shalom. We can see this over and over and over again in the Septuagint, the LXX, which is the 70. It's the only Greek word used for translating shalom therein. And from the mouth of Jesus and his disciples, this word irene becomes just as rich as shalom itself. Completeness in every way is what is addressed by the one word. In 2 Kings 15:17, remember regarding Asa the king, the word shalem is rendered blameless, completely, in 16:9, where the eyes of the Lord are said to move to and fro throughout the earth, that he may strongly support those whose heart is shalem, completely his. Complete, blameless, intact, whole are all ways to translate shalem. Shalom, from the same root, which is quite important in Hebrew, biblical Hebrew at least, is translated wholeness, completeness, soundness, and peace. It is so full a concept, one word cannot possibly convey the entire meaning of shalom. So it matters little in this case which word is used. What matters is how the Lord uses irene and means it. After all, this is a message, again, conveyed by the disciples, but it came directly from the Lord. He told them what to say. Edersheim says no power or authority was formally conferred on the 70, their mission being only temporary and indeed for one definite purpose. Its primary object was to prepare for the coming of the Master in the places to which they were sent. And their selection was from the wider circle of disciples, the number being now 70 instead of 12. Even in these two numbers, as well as the difference in the functions of the two classes of messengers, seemed to indicate that the 12 symbolized the princes of the tribes of Israel, while the 70 were the symbolic representatives of these tribes, like the 70 elders appointed to assist Moses, Numbers 11:16. Now, symbolic meaning of the number 70 continued among the Jews. We can trace it in the 70 supposed, in parentheses that is, translators of the Bible into Greek, the Septuagint, in parentheses, and in the 70 members of the Sanhedrin, or Supreme Court. That's Alfred Edersheim from The Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah. What is clear is that these disciples are not conveying a blessing on someone who does not want it or wish to receive it. This is not some sort of magic trick or force feeding. This isn't even persuasion. They just simply said peace. This is not what the Lord wants. He doesn't want people to, I don't know, be force-fed or pressured into a decision. or else he would have told him something different, some other strategy perhaps. They aren't to stand and argue, persuade, or become apologists for the faith or anything like that. A person of peace is, it seems, almost instantaneously receptive to the word from the disciples at his own door. Well, we're going to talk about peace or irene. We actually have to do that before we find out in this scenario what is indeed the idea of the disciples' greeting and the man of peace. The word irene must hold the key. Make no mistake, you are free to interpret this any way you like. But I'm going to try to make some sense of it based on the words and the meaning of those words and what it meant to the disciples, what it meant to the man in the house, what it means in the Bible, and especially to the Lord. Then there is the issue of how Luke uses this word for peace. It really is hard to know where to start, but I want to share with you some supporting evidence on what I hold to as far as this word is concerned and what was going on there at that doorstep. And then you can decide for yourselves what's going on here a little better or perhaps a little bit more informed. We can quit there because the rest of that is certainly going to take more time than you have or I have at this point. So I have said it before and I'll say it again. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace. See you Sunday, Lord willing. Have a great rest of the week.